This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, Julian Ng, and Ibrahim Sani back with you with the top business stories of the day. We're going to begin, we're looking at...
Selamat Raya to you too.
Selamat Hari Raya, maaf, Zahir Batin. Okay. Slow it down a pace with those greetings. And if you're on the road, do remember to drive very carefully. Even though we're going to be bringing you the most exciting news you've heard since 6 a.m. this morning. First off, Ma Sing, a property developer, ups the ante. Its sales target are rather high considering what others would consider rather grim prospects for the industry. They're actually putting their money where their mouth is and saying it's going to be good for the industry. They're looking at the tail end, or what they think is the tail end, of the rather soft property market.
Yep, they're looking to launch about 2 billion ringgit worth of projects over the next year or so. I guess this is less than what they would launch if things were better. They're saying that double that amount, 4 billion ringgit.
Now, having said that, they are currently looking for land in Greater KL, the Klang Valley, Iskandar, Malaysia, Seberang Perai, and is not looking to venture outside Malaysia. So they're just doubling down their bets on Malaysia.
So what you mean they're looking for land, I mean they're looking to build their land bank?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So on top of that GDV of three or four billion ringgit.
Right. So is this how property developers operate? Essentially, by kind of looking for
land and building properties. Yes.
Yeah, like storing land banks, even during bad times. I mean, is that what they're doing?
Yeah.
Well, bad times are a good opportune time to store up your land, because that means it becomes a sort of buyer's market, and people would want to get out of the land, and they would have a ready buyer for that. But I think land banking is possibly not the be-all and end-all for today's kind of property companies. As a lot of them go through joint ventures. For example, EPF would be a funder of a property, and then they would team up with another developer. They own the land. The other developer will latch on to EPF as a funder and owner of the land, whereas they provide their own experience developing that land.
So an example would be the Bukit Bintang City Centre, the previously demolished Pudu Jail, where UDA is the main developer. They have joint ventured with Setia Eco World, and also EPF being for the funder to that. So that kind of joint venture has always been quite interesting because of the synergy that is presented by all parties. But one thing interesting also about Ma Sing is that they are sitting, according to the CEO, on a cash pile of over 1 billion ringgit. And because of their near negligible net gearing of about 0.09 times, they would be promoting some of their products more aggressively because of the ability for them to actually raise funds and build more homes there.
Yeah, if they have about, 1 or 2 billion right now?
Yeah, about 1 billion plus.
1 billion. So if they want to raise borrowing, they can add to the war chest. Very financially stable company. And talking about land, and Imbi Land is apparently for sale. It's known as Lot 2000. It's going for between 3,300 and 3,500 ringgit per square foot.
With about 230 to 245 per plot ratio. And the size is about 42,000 square feet. It has all these key properties, including the Jalan Pudu area, Berjaya Times Square area, Jalan Imbi area, Jalan Sultan Ismail area. This location of Lot 2000 is indeed the golden triangle of Kuala Lumpur.
Very prime land, 1 square mile, holding a lot of these very valuable shopping retail land.
Okay, so carry me wrong. Developers either do residential developments, or they can do retail developments, or they can do something like an integrated retail residential thing.
Commercial, industrial, what have you.
Industrial, yeah. Or even build cities. I mean, I did an interview with a company in Singapore that's venturing and building, you know, Andhra Pradesh's new capital. A project of 20 years in duration.
I think the other problem with property development is that you can very much only sell to people who can afford it. Land prices have shot through the roof, contributed by the wave of negative interest rates around the world, and a lot of money sloshing around the world. So the only place that money can find its home is into property, and that has pushed up property pricing What about affordable housing? That's the a big issue today. How do you give homes and housing to people who can't afford it? And apparently Marsing wants to go into that with JV with the government as well.
That's very interesting, because you look at Singapore as a successful public housing program. That's in fact, I think, a cornerstone of their industrialization policy, right? So if you want to industrialize, you need to provide affordable housing for workers who are going to be supplying the manpower for your industries, and you know, and also situate them in places so that you know people aren't spending hours commuting to work and such.
And in connection to affordable housing, we also have a report issued by the International Labour Organization that millions, to be exact, about 137 million workers, or almost half of five Southeast Asian countries, will lose their jobs to robots.
Now, these countries include countries like Cambodia, Indonesia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam, where much of the job is still being run manually. And because of the automation of these machineries into how they do things, particularly in the garment industry and the garment manufacturing sector, this sector might see a loss of over 100 million people. The question is, what do we do with these people?
Yeah, the loss of the work, right? But okay, the International Labour Organization that produced the study is interested in promoting workers' rights. I mean, the question is for governments, for even activists, I mean, what constitutes workers' rights? I mean, is it about preserving all jobs in industries that are, you know, suffering some sort of, sunset situation? Or is it about saying, well, let's retrain them, let's put funds behind and find alternative sources of income for those individuals?
Right? I think it is very much about that, because when you talk about labor organizations, they usually prevent workers from being fired or being sacked. That's what workers' rights are. But it's, I think, very hard to stop the tide of automation unless you're a Luddite. And a lot of us want automation, right? You rely so much on your mobile phones, your smart devices, and so on. So the other question is whether you can give them a living or universal wage, as Switzerland had voted on recently, had a referendum on that, rejected, by the way, something that would give every citizen in Switzerland $2,500 per month. One of the reasons cited was to prepare for robotization or automation.
Yeah, and this is, of course, different from that minimum wage that a lot of countries, including US, is actually mulling about, where you know you have a minimum wage of, say, $15 per hour and so on. This $2,500 is living wage that everybody's entitled to in their right.
Minimum wage is for when you have a job.
Yeah.
What if you don't have a job? What do you get, right?
Yeah.
So this is, as you say, a living wage.
Right.
But again, the really interesting question is, you know, how will this country, I mean, in this region alone, you know, a market of 600 million, the promise of, you know, all that trade and commerce producing more jobs. The question always will be quality of those jobs. I mean, in Malaysia, we already have a problem of stagnating wages and such, right?
So the middle income trap, so-called.
Yeah, and this kind of quality has been explained in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Act. But you must remember that not many of the ASEAN countries, is a signatory to that. Only Vietnam and Malaysia, if I recall. And the question is, you know, these other countries, like Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia, and Cambodia, how will they come across and solidify that labor rights notion, because they're not part of the signatory of this TPPA?
The TPPA isn't a beacon of labor rights, right? Because it really places a lot of weight on corporation rights.
Yeah, and also, you know, if you've seen for those who believe that the TPP would usher in, the dismantling of protection for, you know, for and rentier activities and all that, that's not been shown to be necessarily true. I mean, Malaysia had so many carve outs on that in that regard, you know, with regard to state owned industries and such, that, you know, really what was so revolutionary about TPP at the end of the day?
Well, Donald Trump and as well as Hillary Clinton, both presidential nominees in the United States, they both disagreed to the TPP. They said that they wouldn't sign it. But I guess the TPP has got a shot in the arm with Brexit. The UK may be mulling joining the TPP. So we'll see where that goes. You go from one sovereignty reducing coalition to another one, right? So where does this put Brexit?
Interesting. Also in our crosshairs this morning, China's banks, apparently non-performing loans are exceeding almost $299 billion. And that's a number that comes in at the end of May.
This is quite alarming, actually, because at the start of the year, not performing loans as a percentage of total loans slightly under 2%. Today is 2.5, but 2.15%. And that's on the back of loans that are growing about 14 to 15% per annum. So the degree of non-performing loans or bad loans are ballooning. And that's something that's very worrying for the rest of the world as well, because people are talking about the implosion of China.
And one such commentator includes our morning commentator, Tim Mulholland. He was touching on this issue as well. Not to put things, too much credit on them, but the chatter is still real on whether or not China can sustain this kind of numbers in the long run.
Okay, after the news, we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.